will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Hello, everyone. This is Ray Zinn. I'm the author of Tough Things First, and welcome to another Tough Things First podcast. I'm excited today to have a friend of mine to be my guest. He's Norm Wright. He's the dean of the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University. He's not only a great teacher, he's a good leader in the school. And what we're going to talk about today is how to innovate virtually. And, you know, with the COVID virus and other issues, doing things virtually has become kind of a way of life. And so rather than just kind of belabor the issue, Norm, let's talk about, you know, like in education, you're probably teaching, I don't know, virtually almost all classes. And
right.
it's been a challenge for your school as well as other schools to really keep everybody excited, keep the tempo up, and be able to really be creative and innovative and teaching virtually. So that's the reason that I've asked Norm to come today, because they are right in the middle of having to improve and innovate on teaching virtually. That's the purpose of having this podcast, is say, what can we do? How can we improve learning and innovating when we're actually in a virtual environment? I'm going to turn it over to you for a bit, Norm, and have you kind of talk about it, and we'll just go back and forth.
That's great. Thanks, Ray. You know, as the longest serving CEO in Silicon Valley, you obviously had you had a number of moments of reinventing your company, and who knows, maybe even yourself over that period of time. And so this idea of innovation and change is no stranger to you. Thanks for that lead in. You know, certainly higher education has been going through a period of change recently, as we've dealt with online, we've dealt with changing student demand and the things that students want out of higher education, how they want it to be delivered. And we've seen some great examples of that, ranging from Arizona State University to Southern New Hampshire University to our very own Western Governors University. And then a lot of the state and private institutions have been changing as well. As we think about this particular case, though, the case of innovating in a virtual environment, you know, there's a lot of challenges there. And I think you alluded to some of them in your introductory statement. As we think about, number one, just to innovate, you have to have people involved. They've got to stick with it, right? They've got to be active.
Yeah, you got to have excitement. You know, I mean, that's the problem is when you're just sitting at your desk at home or wherever else you're sequestered, you're kind of just sitting there staring at the screen. It's hard to get people excited. You know, the other day when I was talking with you about teaching using, you know, Zoom or some other method of communicating, that kids get up and leave and go get a snack, or they walk off and go to the bathroom or whatever else that they do. They're just... And that they're going to lose their train of thought. They're going to kind of lose kind of where they are, because you're going to keep teaching and they're going to lose kind of where they are. Now, in class, you kind of tell them, hey, if you got to go to the bathroom or if you got to get a snack, do it before you come to class. Don't just pick up and walk out of the class. And you know, we talked about the auditorium. If you got 350 students in the auditorium, you know, it's really hard to communicate with that many people. I have a company that a SaaS company. It's a software as a service company that I own have part ownership in, and they have to communicate with India, with people in Korea and other countries that are, you know, different time zones and so forth. And I asked Searle, I said, how are you how are you doing that? You know, and he said the best way is one-on-one. He says it's hard to innovate or to get some of the information across if you're doing it with a bunch of people. Now, you know, you told me that your average class size is what, 20 or 25 people?
About 32, yeah.
32. So how do you keep that excitement going with that many people?
Well, you know, I think that's a couple of really important points you make here. How do you keep the excitement going when you're talking about groups of 300 and 350? And I think what we found in higher education is that you're not going to get much innovation, and you may not even get much attention when you're running groups of 350, unless the person on the stage is a real entertainer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so what we ended up doing in higher education was moving to much more of a hybrid model in some ways, where maybe we would have the grand section of 350 students, but then we'd be breaking people out into groups of 25 or 30, and maybe these sessions would be run by a graduate assistant or something like that. But that need to get the size down and get people into more personal groups where people can participate.
Yeah, I was surprised that Cyril would say that they can't do it with more than one person. So they say get two people, they do a one-on-one. They just do two. They use a team, Microsoft Team, I think, uses their service, is their method of communicating. And he says that it's just different. I mean, you know, they've tried it. They've tried to do it with a half a dozen, but it's really, really difficult. Now, I've been teaching. I taught seven classes since August. University classes, and there were like an average of 20 to 30 students in each of the classes, and it wasn't easy. I mean, trying to keep track of what they're doing and what they're you know, I could kind of tell that some of them were actually nodding off. They weren't even they were actually sleeping. You know, and you can't innovate if you're not paying attention. So anyway, so what do we do? How do you get excitement if you're going to be doing more than a one-on-one? I mean, one-on-one is pretty easy. Now, in fact, I was surprised that Cyril said they just can't be successful with more than one person.
You know, Ray, that really surprises me too. About a month ago, 2 months ago, I can't remember, time flies. I was in a meeting with a group of people, many of them from Europe. I believe there were a handful out of Asia and then a handful of us in North America. And I don't recall if there were others from other parts of the world, possibly. But, you know, we spent a fair amount of time in a large group, and there were probably about 70 or 80 of us in this particular meeting. And then we broke out into the smaller groups and, you know, to where there were maybe 12 people in the room, if that. And some of the technology really allows you to do that. We had very healthy discussions mm-hmm. that were around innovation in higher education when it comes to management education and so forth. And so I think, you know, a few basics. Number one, you need to have topics that are of interest to your employees. Mm-hmm. And of course, most employees are pretty interested in where they work and, you know, the competitive environment and the things that you're trying to do. And so hopefully we can take a fair amount of that as assumed, but maybe not. And then we have to give them a chance to voice, because you and I both know that it's a lot more fun to be talking sometimes than it is to be listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
though we need to do both, right?
Yep.
And if you're sitting in a group of even 10, 12 people, you just don't have much of a chance to contribute your ideas and your thoughts, and you don't get that back and forth. So I think breaking it into these standard groups of no more than, you know, 5, 6, 7 people is a mm-hmm. is a really great start.
You have to have a team leader. So somebody's got to be the lead. And then if you break out into separate rooms, and I know you can do that on these newer communication software, you still need a sub-leader then in each of the rooms that will carry it on. So I know that, you know, the people have to know what the mission of the meeting is, kind of what it is we're attempting to accomplish. And then we have to be able to make sure they understand the objectives. In other words, that there's really solid reasons and why they're there. And so we can keep and capture their attention and get their comments.
How do you see that differing in a virtual environment, Ray, as compared to a face-to-face environment?
Because you know, you can't feel, and there's no feeling there. I know that that's kind of a funny thing to say, that we need feeling. Like you and I are virtually doing this podcast. You're where you are at your desk, and I'm sitting, you know, hundreds of miles away at my desk. And so, you know, how do we keep this topic going? How do we innovate in this podcast? And it's not easy. In fact, we're doing it even tougher because we're not even using the video. We're just using the audio.
Yeah.
And so that's even a bigger challenge. I've been doing basically virtual training and innovating for many, many years. I mean, at least 20, 25 years, because I had divisions that were all over the world. I mean, there were literally, we must have 30 different offices. And so we would, you know, want to meet on a regular basis, either in an employee one all hands meeting, or we wanted to, you know, develop a new protocol or new idea for our product. And so, you know, we had to figure out how to do this, you know, back before we had Zoom or Team or any of those other services now. And so things are much improved over what,
yeah,
we were, because I was just using a telephone back, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
I wasn't even using a computer.
Yeah. Let me ask you something about that, Ray, because it strikes me, it builds on something else you said earlier. One of the things that we're struggling with a little bit in higher education, I know our faculty are, and we're trying to get used to this, is we're doing some in-person work with live streaming going on. And so maybe because of social distancing, a classroom that normally would hold 60 can now only hold 20. So we have 20 in the classroom and we're broadcasting. And then the question becomes, all right, what's the interaction like with those who are not online? With those who are online and those who are in the physical classroom itself. And I think some of our faculty found early on that you were getting quite a bit of participation from those who were face to face. And you really had to work hard to bring in those who were online. Did you ever experience that in your work when you had maybe somebody from India or from France or whatever, you know, kind of coming into your meeting virtually, and yet you had a group of core people who were there with each other physically?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, for example, doing a design review, we would have the designer in our main office in San Jose, California, and then the person who was giving the design review was in Shenzhen, China.
Yeah.
And different time zone, as you can well imagine. And so some of them are coming to work kind of sleepy because of the time difference. And that caused some issues just that alone. But then, you know, swapping screens and actually doing like PowerPoint presentations, and so that that people on the in the home office could critique and give comments back on the design review, was a challenge, but it's the best we could do, but it did work. Obviously, if you're all together, you can because you have to mute, unmute, you know, when you're
right,
doing it virtually.
Right.
But when you're in a single room environment, you know, you can kind of, do it, kind of somebody shoots out a question and so forth. The other night when they were doing the debate, you know, they had the ability to mute a person, as they were talking to keep them from talking over each other.
Right.
When you're innovating, you may want to talk over each other. You may want to, because something pops into your mind, a thought comes into your mind. Oh, what about this? You know, or did you think about that? That is the challenge. If you're muting and unmuting, I don't know if you, otherwise what's happening is that if you don't mute, then all that background noise happens and you hear people coughing and, you know, or you hear them rummaging through their desks and the speaker picks up everything. Whereas in a regular closed environment, like in a room, you know, you tend to tune that out. You know, you tend to not hear it when you're all together in a classroom or in a single room. But when you're doing it virtually, you know, you hear everything. You can hear them, you know, either coughing or sneezing or, you know, rattling their papers or whatever. That comes through very, very loud, and that's very distracting.
Yeah. And then sometimes people forget that they're in a meeting and their video camera's on, and you see some things going on that distract you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which we tend not to do when we're, you know, clearly in public with each other.
Exactly. You know, exactly. You know, I had a situation when we were doing a virtual meeting with one of our guys in Korea. And so he had just taken a shower and had come out and forgot that he had his camera on. And so we saw him in all of his glory as he was sitting in front of it. He says, then he slammed his laptop closed. Of course, that shut it off. But because he's not, if you forget about, hey, you know, I'm, you know, if the camera's running, I'm you're going to see everything.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the stuff is distracting. Whereas in a classroom or in a room, you know, that's usually pretty well set up, and you know, you don't have that surprise thing, you know, that open mic, as they say, you know. Yeah. So we have to be careful. I mean, it's to do things virtually, you know, you have to prepare. You know, like when Guy and I set up these podcasts, we're on about 15 minutes before we start, so we can get everything all set up and make sure that the sound system is working correctly, and that you know, the background, if we're using the video, is correct, the lighting is correct, and right. And so all that you know is done preparatory to the, you know, to the podcast. So
yeah, let me jump in there if I could, Ray. I think we're probably closing in on the time we have for this podcast today. But as you talk about preparation, one of the things that we're finding in higher education, especially for someone who's presenting to a live audience, they're live streaming, but also, you know, in other cases as well, where maybe not all that's going on, is that it's really helpful, especially if you have a larger group, to have somebody who's helping you run the show.
Right.
So basically, you know how in these meetings you have all these comments. And so I'm sitting here and I'm the leader of the group. I'm facilitating today and I'm trying to see whose hands are going up and in what order, or who's ready to make a comment, or that facial expression that says, hey, somebody's not really agreeing with that and that voice needs to be heard. And then there's all these comments going on the sideboard. And so one of the things we find is that it can be really helpful, whether it's a student or a colleague or whatever, who's paying attention to maybe the chat. And it's kind of saying, hey, there's a question out here, or hey, so-and-so just said this, there's a discussion going on the sideboard. And I think that's one of the things that our faculty are learning to do, is to kind of multitask in a way, or to pull in help, because as we all know, multitasking doesn't always work either.
Yeah, you know, and you're 100% correct that having somebody that's keeping track of who's asking questions and what questions are, you know, because sometimes they may be typing their question, as opposed to expressing it, you know, verbally. Yeah. And somebody's got to be tracking that and keeping track of who in what sequence, so that you can answer that question or be able to address the question in the proper order. So, yeah. No, I agree with you. I think doing things virtually, even though we're in that situation where life is changing, as they say, you know, the new normal, you know, we have to be really cognizant of the issues associated with doing things virtually. And that's the purpose of this podcast. So I really appreciate you taking your time, Dean Wright, to help us, you know, discuss and have this opportunity to present to our listeners what they need to do, what they need to be aware of when they are doing innovating and teaching virtually. So do you have any last comments, Norm, before we call this one a good?
You know, probably just one thing I'd add in, Ray, is that, you know, one of the things that we're experiencing today in some of our classrooms is that there are certain people, whether because they're shy or maybe English isn't their first language or something like that, and they feel a little, you know, uncomfortable voicing, that we're experiencing some people who didn't participate a lot maybe in the face-to-face setting, who are more comfortable typing in comments and so forth, because they have a greater time to formulate those thoughts and so on. And in that way, we're getting some greater diversity of thought and so forth, which, as we know, helps contribute to greater innovation. So I think, you know, despite some of the limitations and so forth, we're actually experiencing some of the gains of wider participation and so forth as we move into this virtual environment, which I think is pretty exciting.
Well, excellent thought. You know that. So there's, you know, there's the good news and there's the bad news. You know, so we're trying to make lemonade out of lemons, and I think we'll do that as we now move into a more virtual way of communicating. But you can't beat this one-on-one visual in the same room situation. But we can learn how to work together, how to communicate virtually, so that we get the most benefit in the environment that we're currently faced with. So thanks, Norm. Really appreciate you joining us today and getting your wisdom, and because you have been doing all this virtual teaching and trying to innovate in your teaching process. So thanks again. And, you know, everyone, appreciate you joining us today on this podcast. You know, don't forget to go to our website, toughthingsfirst.com. Here you'll see all our podcasts that we currently have available, and also our book, Tough Things First. You can get it at Amazon or your favorite bookstore. And my new book, Zen of Zen, which has been out a couple of years, but a good one for you to use. It's a philosophical book that'll help you, you know, come up with ideas of what you can do to improve yourself individually.
Ray, would you mind if I just end with one quote from your book, The Zen of Zen?
Sure, go ahead, please.
I realize it's your show and you should probably end it, but I just couldn't help it. It says, one leadership challenge is to get people behind something they normally would be reluctant to do. In most cases, this is all about change. People hate change and it takes special leadership skills to get people on board. So how does one get people to accept change? A great leader embraces change and promotes it enthusiastically. Change will only be accepted if leadership supports it wholeheartedly. And I just think that is so appropriate to our topic today.
Oh, yeah.
Who are running afraid of this change. And our job as leaders, I think, is to embrace it, just as you mentioned in your book.
Hey, that's great. That's great, Norm, for you bringing that one out. That's right out of my book. And that's perfect. We all hate change, but change is always with us. And we have to be able to deal with it and deal with it in the right way. So, again, thank you for that. And again, thanks for all you who are listening in on this podcast. If you have any questions, you have any ideas, please don't hesitate to send us a note, you know, expressing your feelings about it. We're more than happy to hear what you think of our podcast. So again, thank you, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.